What is happening, everyone? Coach Ishak with HawkFit Coaching and Legion Athletics and your host for today's episode of Anabolic Radio. I'm joined today by Christopher Bearcat, who's one of my best friends. He's a great guy, genuine human being. And for those of you who don't know about him, aren't already following him, I definitely recommend you go give him a follow. Look into some of his content. And he's also the owner of School of Gains, which is an educational platform, and the owner of Competitive Breed, where they focus on competition prep clients and also lifestyle clients with some of the coaches that work under him. And for today's episode, we will be talking briefly about COVID-19, the adjustments you could be making to your nutrition training during this period of time, how to stay on track and still progress towards your goals during this period of time. And we'll briefly touch on some intensifying techniques in regards to how you could really maximize your training during this period of time. How are you this morning, Chris? I know you're sipping on some tea right now. You got that mint and what was it? Green tea on lock. You got to get those epicaticans in.
Yeah, man. Everything's going well. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, man, I can't complain. Everything's going good, man. Everything's going good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Missing the gym more than ever. But it's better than being reactive to the situation and being like really sad about it that I don't have access to the gym. And me personally, like, training provides like so much grounding in my life in regards to just like the benefits it provides me mentally outside of like bodybuilding, external like muscles. Like a lot of people, when they think about fitness or bodybuilding or, you know, working out, they think of it like, oh, I need to lose body fat, I need to build muscle, blah, 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 blah. When in actuality, for me, it's like complete polar opposite from that. And how have you been progressing during this period of time? How has your training nutrition been?
Yeah, man, training's been okay. It's kind of been up and down. I have, it's interesting. As long as I view it as a challenge to like get the job done with less things and be just slightly creative, like it's nothing too crazy. You know, it's relatively easy to actually get the job done, but there's a psychological component of kind of preparing to go to the gym rather than like preparing to work out in your living room. So like I think the mental thing is probably a larger component or a larger change than the actual physical. It's going okay, man. Nutritionally, I am gonna be in a really small deficit. I want to be in a small deficit, lose a little bit of body fat right now, and then hopefully when things get back to normal, I am in a little bit better position to gain a little bit more sensitive to my nutrients and stuff like that coming in. So I'll get back into an actual surplus once I have more tools in my toolbox when it comes to the training aspect. But for now, just eating in a really slight deficit. And yeah, man, everything's going well.
Nice, man. Have your clients been I know you probably already made adjustments to their nutrition training during this period of time, but have they had trouble adjusting to the situation?
Yeah, it's been very individualized. Some people like didn't miss a beat, basically. And it seems like this hasn't affected them much at all. And then a lot of people needed more guidance, or it really kind of hindered their daily routine to such an extent that it was more difficult for them to get into that training routine. So varied. I felt terrible for my contest prep clients. Some of them, we decided to get out of the deficit as a whole and kind of just go into a diet break phase, depending on what might happen later on in the contest season. A couple other competitors were staying in a deficit because they still need to lose more fat regardless of what the date of their competition is going to be. So we're kind of just keeping the wheels turning there. So yeah, you know, everyone's a little bit different, but a lot of people are making it work. And some of my clients have like freaking really good home gym setups with barbells, dumbbells, machines, like out of it legit. Yeah. One of my guys has a full garage gym that like I would want to have in my house down the road. Like, it's very legit. So it just depends on the people, man.
Nice. School of Gains home gym coming soon.
Yeah.
I feel like this situation shouldn't really impact progress all that much unless you really want it to. There's always a way, and this is just my personal perspective about the situation. Like, there's a way to get shit done, like, regardless. And whether that be like putting shit in your backpack or, you know, lifting a sack of potatoes or whatever the case may be, it might not be particularly like optimal, but as long as you're providing your muscles with some sort of training stimulus, you're not going to be losing like all your lean body mass, right? That's something like a lot of people tend to, or I've seen a lot of people like stress about is, oh, I'm going to lose all my muscle, my fat loss phase, whatever, fuck it. I'm going to go eat everything in the cabinet. And just wanted to maybe potentially hear your perspective about how to approach your nutrition during this period of time.
Yeah, for sure. So I think during this time, the fear of losing muscle is really unwarranted. The likelihood of that happening is pretty slim as long as you continue training, okay? The training doesn't need to be the same. It just needs to be there. It needs to be in. The stimulus needs to stay in. And you'll still preserve your lean body mass. You'll preserve your muscle mass. I do think this is going to be a much harder time to progress. And because of that, and to progress in regards to gaining muscle, especially if you're, you know, a more advanced intermediate or advanced trainee. So in those cases, I wouldn't really recommend aggressive calorie surpluses almost for anyone during this time, unless you're a novice trainee. Okay, so if this at-home stimulus and this limited equipment kind of training is, you know, way better than what you previously have done, maybe your baseline was basically no training at all, or you're kind of just stepping up your consistency and your frequency right now during this phase, then you can, you know, still make progress and a more aggressive surplus can be warranted. Otherwise, I think you're just going to gain more body fat, not gain really any muscle mass. You'll preserve your muscle mass, but you're essentially just going to be gaining body fat during this time if you're in an aggressive surplus. So for the most part, I think people should be eating at calorie maintenance, maybe utilize this time to actually lose fat and improve their body composition, depending on where they're currently at, get into a slight deficit. Otherwise, I don't really see the point of eating in a calorie surplus if your needs is lower, your output's lower as a whole, and that training stimulus, even though it's definitely enough to maintain your muscle mass, is probably not enough to make any significant progress. So kind of just ride the wave and hold things still.
Guys, I hope you listen to what Chris said. You're going to be less active during this period of time, and that's going to be the case for most people because we're under these lockdown, quarantine type circumstances, right? So for most people who are typically like active, their NEAT, non-exercise activity thermogenesis, is going to take a hit, right? So it's more of a reason to be cognizant of your activity levels. And if you notice that like your step count or whatever the case may be, however you tend to track that, is significantly lower, maybe you could implement something as simple as a 30-minute walk every single day, or maybe going on a jog, and use this as a period of time to improve your cardiovascular function, which in turn is going to help you improve other things related to building muscle, strength gain, whatever the case may be. So going into a surplus for most people might not be the most ideal things to do in regards to your nutrition, and it depends on your level of advancement, but like the big picture of things, we have to look at the circumstances in which most people are under, and that being like not having access to a lot of equipment, having like not having the right or a sufficient amount of loads, like having limited loads, and for someone who's more in the maintenance or someone going from a surplus to a maintenance could be more prone to something like body recomp during this period of time. And someone going from a deficit to maintenance could also be prone to body recomp during this period of time. In regards to contest prep and competitors, I know everything's still sort of up in the air with like competition dates, but would you have any take-home keys for anyone who is contest prepping during this period of time?
Yeah, you know, depending on where they're at in their fat loss phase, if they've lost a significant amount of weight and they've been in a deficit for a while, just a lot of people have been in a deficit since January. It's kind of just the way the culture works. You know, New Year's comes around and people start dialing in their nutrition and get into a calorie deficit. If you've been in an extended deficit from, you know, January to now, which is what, April, what are we at, like April 10th or something like that? It's a great time to utilize a diet break and at least eat at maintenance, kind of recover some of those negative metabolic adaptations that have occurred, and just decrease all of that systemic fatigue and stress. So maybe this is a time you implement a diet break. If you've just been dieting for a couple weeks before this whole pandemic happened, you still have a ton of body fat to lose, then, you know, consider staying in your deficit and continue to make progress in that realm, depending on when you're going to compete. So I have people that are still looking at June dates right now, because that hasn't been called off yet. It basically seems like all April and May competitions have been called off, but June is still up in the air. So most of them I still have in a deficit right now, you know. Some are diet breaking, some are in a deficit, and then some completely threw in the towel and probably just said, hey, I'm not gonna step on stage this year. Just because they didn't want to diet throughout the entire summer. They didn't want to compete in the late summer or early fall. They wanted to compete in the late spring or early summer. So I get that if that's the scenario. So yeah, it's super individual, but definitely consider utilizing a diet break, an extended diet break right now.
Good points. Good points. And potentially think about implementing a diet break. And I know for some people, this could be a difficult period of time to adhere nutritionally. I know some of my clients who've had like eating disorder type habits in the past are struggling with some things now. And some of my other clients aren't really struggling with anything. And I feel like it's a matter of like recognizing that and implementing specific strategies to better help manage that, whether that be like more mindful eating techniques or whatever the case may be. Do you have any take home tips for people in regards to better adhering nutritionally during this period of time?
Yeah, man, I think it really comes down to just having an actual plan, because their daily routine is really thrown off. They might be waking up at a different time of day. They're not leaving the house, so they, you know, they're not eating on lunch break. They're not eating right when they get out of work before going to the gym. So a lot of their structure is thrown off nutritionally as well. So I think just creating that plan and saying, okay, I'm going to wake up at X time. I'm going to eat X amount of meals per day, and they're going to be spread out approximately these, you know, by 3 to 5 hours or whatever it may be, are just giving yourself that structure and actually having a plan in place gives you something to execute rather than feeling really lost and not having that plan. And then that kind of spirals into more confusion, less motivation. And yeah, man, just having a plan is very, very beneficial in itself.
Staying in your routine.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier in the podcast, guy, like look at Chris's sweater, read Chris's sweater, whatever it takes. And I know like a lot of people might feel some type of way about like me saying that, like them, if they're a parent and they have a lot of kids that they're looking after, but the reality is it comes down to priorities. Like, we all have time, like, and you might not have to get like a crazy grueling home workout in, but really just setting an hour a day, maybe 45 minutes even, to get like warm up, get a great home workout in, is something that can help you in regards to just staying on track with a lot of these habits that you've taken the time to build up, right? It doesn't make sense to revert back to your old ways just because the gym is closed, right? You could still stay in your routine and you can make the most out of the situation rather than being reactive to it. So specifically for nutrition, we'll put that aside right now. Training is something I'm super passionate about. I know you're super passionate about. And there's so many things we could talk about when it comes to training during this period of time. I know you've put out a spreadsheet that's available for people to download. I've put out resources. So like there's resources out there for people to go to better manage their training during this period of time, staying on track. And basically, there are specific movement patterns that we structure in training program. And based off of everything I've heard and what I think is beneficial for most people could maybe potentially be either a full body split or an upper lower type split, just because your frequency in hitting each muscle group is going to be a little bit higher. Personally, I prefer an upper lower split just because, you know, you're able to allocate more energy towards those muscle groups in a given session, which in turn will translate to a more of an effective training stimulus, in my opinion. But I'd love to hear your perspectives on this situation, training with this type of situation.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's important to just determine kind of how many days per week you want to train first and foremost. And then from there, you kind of select what split might make the most sense. So like if you're going to train, you know, 3 days per week and you know you're only going to get three sessions in, I wouldn't recommend something like a push-pull legs where you're only getting a 1x frequency in. So in that case, maybe three full body sessions work out well, or you do one full body and then one upper, one lower. So there's a lot of different ways you can go about it, depending on how many days you're training. So right now, I haven't really implemented this yet, but this is kind of what my plan is going to be moving forward. I think I'm going to basically be doing like an upper body day that's primarily chest and back focused. So it's just going to be compounds. It's going to be basically horizontal push, horizontal pulls, vertical pushes, vertical pulls, and then like different angle pushes and pulls, all compound movements. So I won't do any direct bicep tricep work, and I won't really do much direct shoulder work, but it's going to get hit through those compound lifts. Then the next day, I'm thinking to do legs with some shoulder isolation work. So primarily all legs, and then maybe just throw in some laterals. And then on my third day, I'm thinking to do another upper body day with more isolation work, kind of focused on shoulders and arms. And the only chest and back work I would do is like a chest fly and a straight arm, like resistance band pullover. So just like isolation work. So I think that's how I'm going to split it up. So it'll basically be like upper chest and back focused, lower like legs with a dabble of shoulders in there. And then it's going to be upper again, but it's going to be really shoulder and arm focused with like a dabble of chest and back, just isolation, and then rinse and repeat. So I think that's what I'm going to do right now. And if I can get basically three sessions on, one session off, like 3 days on, one day off, I think that would be good enough for now. So that's where
your frequency is pretty high.
Yeah.
Pumpkin belt, huh?
That's the goal right now. That's the goal. And it's super hard to get my shoulders sore without heavy load. So I don't have dumbbells. I don't have any machines. So like all I can really do are like pike push-ups, those overhead push-ups, like handstand push-ups, but I could only get like three.
Hard AF.
Yeah, they're super hard. So I can't do a ton of different shoulder work that's gonna like really get me sore, so to speak. And because I'm not sore, I feel like I can hit it more frequently. So yeah, I'll just do like laterals on that leg day and then kind of blast them on that other day. So we'll see what happens.
Nice, man. And I know you ordered some bands and some other equipment, which will be great for helping you like just mimic basic movement patterns like cables, like resistance bands. You could do low to high cable flies. You could do high to low cable flies. There's a lot of things you could do just in regards to, it's just the setup, right? You just have to line up the line of pull with what tissue you're trying to train. But great points, man. Frequency is a little bit higher. Select how many days you want to be training per week and go from there. The main thing, if you're doing full body, if you're doing a little bit higher of a frequency-based type training, you have to give yourself an adequate amount of time to recover between sessions. And I know I made a post about this like a couple days ago, but all this home training, seeing all these home workouts are great, but you also want to be aware of not overtraining, right? And looking for signs in regards to overtraining, whether that be excessive DOMS or changes in heart rate variability, like your blood pressure or your heart rate or lackluster sleep or whatever the case may be, there's a lot of biofeedback signals that give you a sense that you're overtraining, right? And I know a lot of people during this period of time, they just have bands, right? Or they could just load things up in either a backpack or whatever the case may be. A lot of people are working with limited loads. A lot of people don't have access to certain machines or whatever equipment. Obviously, we could go on like Facebook Marketplace, and we could go on Craigslist, and we could search for dumbbells or machines or whatever the case may be. But a lot of people's training is going to be dictated by what they have availability to in regards to machines and weight. And that being the case, that limits us to more of a quote unquote like metabolic type training stimulus, like higher reps, a little bit shorter work to rest ratio between sets. And obviously we could implement things like different intensity techniques, whether that be drop sets, whether that be supersets. And I know for you, you have just as much of a passion for training as me. But I'd love to briefly touch over different intensity techniques and what you could really structure your training to be like around this period of time in regards to rep ranges, set ranges, so on and so forth.
Yeah, for sure. So right now I'm doing a lot of supersetting. It's typically agonist, antagonist. So it'd be like a chest exercise and a back exercise. The setup I have here at like the community trail, we have like an inverted row setup and a like a push-up setup. So I literally just do horizontal rows, horizontal push. So I do rows and push-ups together. I do pull-ups and pike shoulder presses together. I do a different variation of pull-ups, basically in the scapular plane, supersetted with incline push-ups. So yeah, I'm doing a lot of agonist, antagonistic supersets. And then like tomorrow when I do shoulders and arms, I'm definitely going to be supersetting biceps and triceps and potentially even doing giant sets of like delt, tricep, bicep, delt, tricep, bicep. It just kind of makes the workout more efficient. Especially when I'm doing these exercises, like if I'm doing push-ups, you know, a set of 30, my first set, using this full range of motion and the setup I have allows me to go deeper than the floor because I'm like suspended in the air. Mm-hmm. So I'm getting like a really deep stretch. You know, by manipulating tempo, I'm able to decrease the amount of reps I can get. So if I do slower tempo, I'm just going to fatigue earlier, and that's going to, you know, maybe take a set of 50 push-ups down to 30, which is really beneficial. And then by taking shorter rest periods, that next set, instead of getting 30 reps, I'm probably only going to get like 22, and then I might get like 18. So even though my reps per set are going down pretty significantly each set, I don't really care in this scenario because I'm not trying to progressively overload on the actual push-up. Like I'm not doing them loaded. So I'm just trying to get really close to failure. Yeah. Making sure, so the closer and closer you get to failure, the more motor units you're recruiting, the more muscle fibers you're recruiting. And that's going to be really important when you're training with lighter loads. Otherwise, you're never really going to stimulate those fast twitch muscle fibers unless you're getting to that closer proximity to failure. So that's why going closer to your failure point is going to be more important to basically ensure you're stimulating all your motor units and muscle fibers throughout the set. And that's just going to give you a better bang for your buck and kind of ensure that you are able to preserve your muscle mass. So I trained upper yesterday. I did like the chest and back focused one, and I'm pretty darn sore today. Like my chest is pretty sore. My front delts are really sore because of some of the movements I was kind of forced to do from this setup. I was doing like a lot of neutral grip pressing rather than like pronated wide. So my shoulder joint was kind of moving through flexion a lot rather than moving through like horizontal adduction while I'm doing those push-ups. So yeah, my front delts are pretty shot. My back is really sore. So, I mean, I got a good stimulus. It's pretty cool. I've actually been getting better pumps with these workouts compared to the actual training sessions in the gym. I think because I'm keeping really short rest intervals, whereas in the gym, I'm resting for a longer period of time to ensure I can lift the maximum amount of load for maximum amount of reps. So yeah, it's different stimulus, man. It's interesting. It's definitely more metabolic, like you mentioned. So
Yeah. Great points, man. Awesome points. And I know for most people, like, it can be hard to, you know, you being out of the gym environment, really finding yourself mentally to get your training done. But, you know, although these circumstances are not ideal, it doesn't mean you can't still maintain your progress during this period of time. And it doesn't mean you can't get a solid training session. And so most of us think of, like, training as like in this binary fashion where, okay, it's just progressing towards these fat loss, muscle gain related goals, when in actuality, it provides us so much more, especially when it comes to just health, like just general health, general psychological health, general physical health. It provides us with a lot of value. And I know for most people, like, this might not be ideal, but really, like, taking this period of time to really master your execution across movements. I kind of wish we'd touched on that before we talked about intensity techniques, but really mastering your execution for movement patterns is going to potentially translate over to your training once you actually get back into the gym, and ensuring you're getting most attention on the target muscle, which is where we want it. And I know you made a post on this the other day, in regards to different planes of motion you're actually, like, pulling through for pull-ups, for example, or the different functions that different muscle groups have, and how in your execution we'll be targeting those different functions. Would you briefly like to touch on, like, the pull-up analogy that you made a post about?
Yeah, sure. So I was basically just talking about doing these different vertical pulls or any sort of movement. Like, you can do vertical pulls, vertical presses, horizontal pulls, horizontal presses in different planes, or having your setup totally different. That's going to dictate what muscles are working. So in the pull-up variation, I was talking about doing, like, wide pronated pull-ups and moving through shoulder adduction to train the lat, working in this transverse plane, compared to doing, like, a neutral grip pull-up where you're now working in the frontal plane and you're pulling through shoulder extension. So you're doing two different functions of the lat just by doing that. I kind of briefly mentioned that earlier in the podcast, and I said the push-ups I was doing, I was forced to be in this neutral grip because I was doing it on an apparatus. And it allowed me to get a greater stretch and a greater range of motion. But now my shoulder joint was pressing through essentially shoulder flexion. And therefore, my front delt was doing a ton of the work. My clavicular head of my pec was doing a decent amount of work. But the sternal portion of my pec really wasn't doing much work there. So it was more front delt and tricep dominant rather than chest dominant, just because of the width I was actually pressing in and my internal external rotation of the shoulder and my hand positioning, so my forearm. So all that stuff can vary. For example, if you're doing horizontal rows, if you're doing, like, a pronated horizontal row with your elbows flaring out, you're going to get a ton of rear delt, mid trap, and all of your upper back kind of coming into play. But if you do a horizontal row with your elbows tucked down by to your side and you're rowing to the hip, rear delts really aren't going to contribute that much, and it's going to be a lot more mid back and lat focused as you're moving through extension instead of horizontal abduction. So yeah, there's so many different ways, like, literally just by doing different pull-ups and push-ups and row variations, I can do, like, 8 different exercises for back, but I'm just doing different pull-ups and different rows, but it's still 8 different versions of it, right? So yeah, you have plenty of options, plenty of options.
Absolutely. Great points. And it's good to understand, like, on the surface for most people, like, okay, I'm doing a row that's targeting my back, but eventually, like, you'll have to be a little bit more strategic and structured about how you approach performing specific movements, which in turn is going to translate to more of an effective and efficient training stimulus, which is what we want. I know a lot of people refer to this as, like, junk volume, but really minimizing how much volume you're doing and understanding what musculature those movement patterns you're doing is targeting is something that could help you in regards to just effectiveness, right? So like Chris was saying, you could either be targeting more upper mid back, or you could be targeting more lats, depending on the plane of motion that you're pulling through. Great points, man. And yeah,
one thing I wanted to touch on that popped into my head as we were chatting was, if you're somebody who is more interested in powerlifting, or you typically just lift in the lower rep ranges, let's just call it 3 to 10, right? Let's just say you're somebody that really never does more than 10 reps, and you sure hell never do more than 15 reps. I might actually argue now is a chance for you to grow and make hypertrophy gains, because you're always providing yourself with a stimulus, or you're always relying on mechanical tension to be the primary growth stimulus. Whereas now you might be forcing your body, or you might be forcing hypertrophic adaptations to occur on those slow twitch fibers that you never actually took to failure and to fatigue. So when you're lifting very heavy loads, you can recruit all your motor units, and you can recruit all your muscle fibers, right? You can max out muscle activation with heavy lifting. However, when you actually fail with heavy loads, you're failing because primarily those fast twitch fibers aren't able to produce enough force, right? We don't really rely on slow twitch fibers for force production. We know that they can't produce as much force. They're better for endurance purposes. So when you're failing in the lower rep ranges, you're primarily failing because you can't produce enough force, and a lot of that kind of falls on the fast twitch muscle fibers not being able to do so. If you've never taken your slow twitch muscle fibers to their actual failure point from an endurance standpoint, you've never provided a stimulus that's going to maximize hypertrophy for those fiber types. So this might be a great opportunity for those that typically lift in the lower rep ranges and typically focus on just heavier loading, to actually make hypertrophic gains. Okay. So that would be pretty cool. Like I'm somebody that kind of lifts more in that moderate to high rep range anyway when I'm in the gym. I haven't done like triples in forever, and I basically I typically work in like the 6 rep range plus, like 6 to 20 is typically my range. But if you're someone that's used to lifting heavier, you can actually probably use this time to make hypertrophic gains. And then when you get back into the gym, you might be a little bit weaker at first because your central nervous system hasn't really felt those heavy loads. But I would argue that once you get back to training, you might actually be stronger than ever, maybe after like 3 to 6 weeks of normal lifting again, because you made new adaptations and you made new gains that weren't kind of there in the past. So that'd be interesting to see.
This is kind of going in the deep end, but you feel like that's because they're more limited to that neurological hypertrophy type training stimulus, and now they're obtaining the benefits in regards to working in those higher rep ranges and more metabolic type training stimulus.
Yeah, so like what I'm saying is, if somebody does grow right now and they make hypertrophy gains, we can just theoretically say, let's just say it's occurring primarily to their slow twitch muscle fibers. If they actually grow in terms of total size, and let's just say like, yeah, total fiber size increase, total muscle size increases, when they get back to lifting heavier loads, they're going to be able to produce more force once they're neurologically skilled again, like once they're there, because they have more muscle fibers to produce total force. So even though the slow twitch fibers aren't ideal and they're not really the primary mover, so to speak, you're still going to be able to generate more total force if you did make gains during this time period.
Yeah. A little advanced for some people. I know we're talking about different fiber types, and I know we've had conversations off camera about like Dr. Cody Hahn and whatnot, and you made a post about different fiber types in regards to understanding how to really integrate that in your training. This might not be like of a great benefit for most people, just because the gym is out. But I like learning about this type of stuff. I'm not an expert about like muscle fiber type. I'm not in the fucking lab doing biopsies and stuff. Yeah. So, but I'd love to hear like your thought process on different muscle fiber types and really like you integrating that as part of your training.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of already been put into practice. Just when you kind of look at what's commonly done for certain muscle groups, to some extent. So like, let's just use the gastroc, for example. Like your gastroc is primarily a fast twitch muscle, and then your soleus is primarily a slow twitch endurance muscle. So if you look at some people's training programs, they might program their gastroc training to be, you know, more in the heavier loading schemes. They might do more like 6 to 10 rep work. They're always focused on really explosive concentrics, pausing at the bottom, and then just like maximizing power output, because it is more of a fast twitch muscle when you look at it as a whole. And then when you look at the soleus, you might want to do higher rep work, like in the 15 to 20 rep, because it's primarily slow twitch muscle fiber. So you kind of can see that if you look at how people have programmed in the past. So some people have already kind of considered that in their programming, looking at the muscle as a whole, and then what is it predominantly, you know, a fast twitch muscle fiber, or is it predominantly made up of more slow twitch? So something like the gastrocnemius of the calf is more of a, it's composed of more fast twitch muscle fibers than it is slow twitch. So a lot of people utilize heavier loads when training the gastroc. They might stick to lower rep ranges. And then on the soleus, they might do higher rep range work just to kind of fatigue more of those slow twitch muscle fibers and to actually take that to its true failure point. So that's been considered in the research. I think a lot more is needed in order to do so. But theoretically, it makes sense. If you want to maximize muscle hypertrophy, you still want to provide a stimulus for both fiber types. The thing that's really important to take into consideration is that fast twitch muscles have much more growth potential. They're already significantly larger in size. So if you're someone who's kind of genetically blessed and you have more of a fast twitch dominant makeup, you have greater potential for growth. You have greater potential for force output and overall strength. And that is probably a reason why some people are genetic freaks and they're super strong. Besides looking at their leverages and how their body is actually made from a structural standpoint, if you're looking at muscle fiber type, that's probably another part of the equation. Whereas some athletes are going to be better for endurance activities because of that same variable as well.
That's incredible. Our bodies are awesome. And it's crazy to think about how many variables there are when it comes to like all of this. And I feel like for coaches, this is important to understand because it will better allow them to structure their clients like training. And just awesome. But yeah. Yeah, man, great points. And I know you said you're working on a few publications right now. Are you able to reveal a little about them? Or?
Yeah, so one just got recently accepted for the Strength and Conditioning Journal. It was a collaboration project with Dr. Guillermo Escalante. He's actually out in California as well, and he's the PI on it. So I was really glad that he invited me to collaborate. That was on fasted cardio versus fed cardio. This is a research review paper, so it's not novel experimentation. It's just providing a different perspective on what the literature that already exists kind of demonstrates and shows. So I'm really pumped about that. I just got word yesterday, though, it might not actually be available until October because it's for this bodybuilding special edition journal within the Strength and Conditioning Journal. So I'm really pumped about it.
Can you reveal a little about it just to give some people some insight?
Yeah, sure. So a lot of people basically say there's no difference between fasted cardio and fed cardio. And as long as you burn, you know, 300 calories in a cardio session, whether you're fed or fasted, it's not going to matter in the 24-hour period or within the course of the week. I personally feel a little bit differently towards it. Again, if you look at all the research, basically all the studies don't show a significant difference between the two. They're both effective strategies for overall weight loss. Some of the issues with the literature is that when you look at the study demographic that's generally utilized, it's usually overweight and obese individuals. It's rarely in the athletic populations, and it has never been actually performed in physique athletes who are like already lean and healthy and then going to the extreme end of lean where they're actually becoming unhealthy. So it hasn't been performed then. But when you look at those studies, even though there is no statistical significance for the fat loss in the fed versus fasted groups, most studies favor the fasted cardio group slightly. Okay. And when you look at science, you really should pay attention to statistical significance. So I'm not trying to undermine that. Our points and our perspective that we share on that paper is something along the lines of the demographic is in obese and overweight subjects. So we need to take that with a big grain of salt. And more importantly, a lot of these studies are, you know, 6 weeks long, 4 weeks long, or 8 weeks long. And a lot of contest prep athletes prep for 12 weeks, 16 weeks, 20 weeks, 24 weeks. So that same study might have showed a statistical significance if the duration of the actual experiment was longer. So if the 6 week study was a 12 week study, the fasted group might have had a significant difference because it started to trend in that direction. So we kind of look at factors like that. And then we were going to mention things about supplementation, but we ended up pulling it from the review paper. But I wrote up a section basically stating, you know, physique athletes also use ingredients like caffeine or yohimbine or green tea while performing fasted cardio. And those can kind of compound and have a greater effect on the outcome. So when you take the supplements in consideration, the actual population in consideration, and then the total duration of how long these athletes are prepping for, they're in a fat loss phase for, perhaps there is a difference.
We flash do know, back to 2019 contest prep. Yeah,
when you look at some of the acute differences, the research does show that fasted cardio does lead to greater oxidation of intramuscular triglycerides. We don't know if that's going to make a difference in regards to the visual difference and the aesthetics. I actually spoke to Eric Helms about this years ago. I'm talking maybe 4 years ago before I knew him on a personal level on a Facebook thread. I was talking, yeah, that's crazy. I was mentioning this like years ago when I was in grad school. He doesn't think it would make a difference. At least back then what he stated on Facebook was like, you know, it's not going to matter. It's really just about subcutaneous body fat and the differences in intramuscular triglyceride oxidation probably wouldn't make a difference in regards to the aesthetics. I think that we don't know yet, but I think it might, because when I look at skeletal muscle and you look at the fat within skeletal muscle, I have a feeling it might lead to like a deeper look in regards to the striations or the separation between certain heads. So if you look at like a shredded quad, the first time I got really lean, my legs came in last. And I don't know if it was more of a subcutaneous thing or I didn't see separation between my four heads of my quad until I got really, really lean. I don't know if that had anything to do with intramuscular triglycerides or just subcutaneous fat. But this is like really advanced and like, yeah, a little bit off topic.
It's crazy to think about. Yeah, a little off topic, but like still like awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So let me share this. The first time I ever got contest lean, the first time any of my clients have gotten contest lean, if their legs were the first thing, the last thing to come in, they had no separation between the heads of their quads. So you didn't see their rec fem, their VL, their BMO, even their sartorius and their hip flexors. Like you didn't see that separation until the very end. The thing that interests me a lot is after contest prep, once they regain body fat and they regain subcutaneous body fat, they still kept that separation within their quads. So even though they're not paper skin thin, they're not super lean, they're not as tight because they regain subcutaneous fat, they maintain separation within the muscle. Like visually, there is a change that occurred. You too? Yeah, so.
So like body fat distribution after I finished prep was super interesting because I've had less I've ever had in my legs right now. And like during contest prep, like my legs, we got them fucking nasty striations in the vastus lateralis. Like it's interesting. I feel like although I'm around the same body weight, like I'm 190 right now, I do feel like body fat distribution is much more evened out on my body, whereas before contest prep, I had like a shit ton of body fat in my legs because I had never really gotten them that lean before.
Sure.
And yeah.
Yeah, man. So I don't, besides body fat distribution in regards to like where you're storing like lower half, upper half, midsection, I think it also has to do like subcutaneous versus intramuscular. So like if you look at someone like Philip Ricardo Jr., even when he's like 20 pounds over stage weight, he still has like glute striations. They're obviously not contest lean glute striations, but like they're still there. And I think a part of that has to do with this component of potentially differences in intramuscular triglycerides. That's why veterans of this sport, they get like a little bit leaner and leaner every single time, or they're showing new levels of detail. I don't think changes in subcutaneous fat are actually occurring. Like if they've gotten super peeled, you know, when they were 30 years old and they look better when they're 35, I don't think it's because they're getting leaner from a subcutaneous standpoint the next diet phase. I think it's because maybe they're tapping into more intramuscular triglycerides over time and they're like presenting more separation between the muscle bellies and like within the fiber itself. So you see more detail. That's something that we don't like understand from an aesthetic standpoint and from a scientific standpoint, but that's just like a hypothesis and a theory that I have.
So interesting to know. And before, this is like something that sparked so much literature on it, right? Nice, man. Great points. And I know we're slowly creeping up on time. I don't want to keep you too long. I genuinely want to thank you for your coming on, doing this again. This is our second time filming this, by the way, guys. The first time, I don't know what happened to the video, but it didn't get saved. But these are going to get saved. And I hope you guys took a lot of value away from hearing just this discussion back and forth between me and Chris. We tried to keep it as natural as possible because, you know, that's just how I would rather have these podcasts structured. But do you have any take home keys for the audience, Chris? Anything you have coming up?
No, man, just, you know, if anyone has any questions, feel free to reach out. Create a routine. If you can't stick to your previous daily routine, which you probably can't because life is kind of different for all of us right now, you need to create a new one. Do what you can, move every day, whether it's, you know, some sort of resistance training, stretching, walking, just get some movement in on a daily basis. Set a goal too, like have a goal during this time period.
Learn something new.
Yeah. Learn something new. Like we probably have a minimum of 4 to 6 weeks left of this at least from what it seems like. Right. So, yeah, start a new project or, you know, pick up a new book or learn something new. And yeah, I mean, I'm always working on kind of new things in the background. I've also taken this time to like take my foot off the gas pedal in some ways and, you know, ask myself like, huh?
Fill your own cup.
Yeah. Yeah. Like ask myself like, okay, where do I want to put my energy moving forward? Instead of kind of being, instead of like being in the eye of the storm and just like going with the flow, like you typically do, like this kind of gives you a chance to reset and like, yeah, self audit and evaluate, like, what do you want to do moving forward? What changes do you want to make? So we do have more time with ourselves to self audit and do that stuff. So yeah, look inward, find some answers, learn some new things, and just make the most of it. We'll get through this. And I think this can be a blessing in disguise for many people. So hopefully it is. Hopefully you guys get through this, stay safe. And yeah, that's really it. Much love.
Thanks for tuning in, guys, and stay tuned for future episodes. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.